We will call the meeting to order. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the July 31st meeting?
Move to approve the minutes.
Move to approve the minutes of the July 31st meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Just one housekeeping item. We're going to take the agenda in order with the exception of TC-12-102. We're going to move that one to the bottom of the calendar, but everything else we will take in order. With that, consumer reports. Deb Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Nelson. The Commission received a total of 92 contacts since the last report was prepared for the August 14th, 2012 Commission meeting. 23 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 21 of the contacts involved electric service, 6 contacts involved natural gas service, 14 contacts involved cell phone service, 13 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, 2 contacts involved one call, and 13 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,257 of the 1,285 complaints received in 2012 have been resolved.
Thank you. Questions from the Commission? Seeing none? Thank you. And we do, again, have a large number of people on the line. If you would be so kind as to mute your phones until it's your turn, that will help us keep the background noise at a minimum. With that, we'll go into the first electric docket, EL-12-047, in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corp for approval of a contract with deviations. Mr. Decker.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Jeff Decker with Northwestern Energy. The City of Northville has asked Northwestern to extend distribution service to their city lagoons for their new pump. The pump is projected to only run a couple of times per year. With this small amount of unknown usage, the customer agreed to pay the entire cost of the project up front. After 3 years, we will review their usage from this line, and based on that usage, the project will be recalculated to determine if a refund of a portion of the original payment is needed. This morning, we are asking for your approval to charge the customer for the cost of this project. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you. Staff, Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Matthew Tisdo with staff. Staff recommends approval of this contract with deviations, but would like to address our desire for future agreements to avoid instances of ambiguity. For instance, paragraph 2 of the agreement before you states that the customer shall be responsible for payment of a portion of the total costs of installation and construction, when in this case the customer is actually paying the entire cost. However, the agreement lists the amount to be paid and includes a breakdown of the total project costs. So while we are satisfied that the City of Northville is fully aware that they are paying for the whole project, we would prefer to see the language in the written agreement better reflect the terms of said agreement. And with that, we're available for questions.
Thank you. Questions for either party by the Commission? I just have one for Mr. Decker. Do you understand the request from Mr. Tisdall that any of these future agreements be more precise in that particular area?
I do, and I agree with his recommendation, and it's certainly something we will do in the future. We should have caught that.
Okay, very good. Any other questions?
Could I maybe...
Certainly, John.
Hi, Jeff. This is John Smith. I got just a question on the tariff sheet filing, and this may have been communicated to you, but it occurs to me because these contracts, and it isn't just this one, but all of them, have a 3-year executory obligation in there, that probably the term of the contract should really be deemed to be the 3-year pre-adjustment point. And perhaps all of those contracts should continue to be listed until all obligations are fulfilled under the agreement, because one of them won't be fulfilled for 3 years. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does, John. That, we can put those back on and refile that, and then in the future we'll leave them on. I think that's a good catch.
Thank you.
Very good. Other questions? If not, is there a motion? I will move in EL 12-047 that the commission approve the contract with deviations. Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor vote aye. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. EL 12-048, in the matter of the filing of Northern States Power Company DBA XL Energy for approval of a refund of a residential saver switch program billing error. Ms. Valley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Carrie Valley for Northern States Power Company. We did file this request for approval of our refund. We had experienced an error in the application of the saver switch discount after the implementation of the final rates in our last rate case. We've agreed with staff that we would implement this refund and apply an interest rate of 7%. We acknowledge that we did not meet the 30-day requirement under the rule in this case, and we, you know, agree with staff will make better efforts in that case going forward and alert them to that earlier. In this case, we experienced a little bit of a difficulty with a large number of customers, but discrete set of customers that were eligible for the refund and working through that process.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. Matthew Tizzle again. Just a few pieces of information. Approximately 17,400 air conditioning customers will receive a refund of about $32. 600 water heating customers can expect around $10. And then, as Ms. Valley referenced, we did reach out to Xcel and express our desire for them to remain in compliance with administrative rule, and that we understand the circumstances here, but would appreciate to be kept in the loop in the future. So staff recommends approval.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Fegan.
In EL 12-048, move that the commission approve the refund.
Discussion on the motion. Commissioner Hansen.
Are we asking for a vote or for a comment? I'm always ready for a comment. But if
go ahead with a comment.
I'm sure the 18,000 customers will appreciate the refund, and especially with the 7% added to their cost of funds. But at the same time, of course, we want to make certain that Xcel is all of the utilities are careful not to overcharge their customers. And I think we should also make certain that people understand that some people, the multitude of people that are listening, are going to wonder whether or not they're getting a refund or not. And this is for the saver switch customers only. Thank you.
Very good. Other discussion? I guess I would simply say to Xcel, we do appreciate your bringing this forward, understand the timing difficulties in getting this taken care of as quickly as what the rule requires. I think by offering the 7% interest, you've done what you need to make that right, and we appreciate moving this forward. Other discussion? Seeing none, is there a motion? There is a motion. All those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Telecommunications, TC 12-035, in the matter of the application of Midcontinent Communications for amended certificate of authority. And we've got the questions on withdrawing intervener status and approving the certificate of authority. And I'm going to go first to Nology for your motion to withdraw. Meredith?
Good morning, commissioners and staff. Meredith Moore appearing on behalf of Nology Community Telephone this morning. Nology is the incumbent in the Lenox Rural Exchange area, and in April of this year intervened in Mid-Continent's petition for amended certificate of authority to provide service in that particular exchange. Since that original filing, Mid-Continent has made subsequent clarifying filings, and based on internal discussions within Knowledge, Knowledge now desires to withdraw its intervention in this particular matter, and if the Commission grants that withdrawal, it would not participate in any way, shape, or form in any future proceedings in that particular matter. So we would simply ask this morning that the Commission recognize Knowledge's petition for withdrawal of its intervention in this docket. Thank you.
Thank you. Second petition for withdrawal, South Dakota Telecommunications Association. Mr. Coit.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, commissioners and staff. SDTA is also filing to withdraw its intervention status. We actually intervened in this case over concerns related to the fact that Mid-Continent was limiting its offering of competitive services to just the Lenox Exchange and generally, I believe, just the town of Lenox, Lenox being, I think, the largest exchange within that Knowledge Community Telephone Company service area. There were some particular concerns that we had about the request for a waiver of the requirements to provide service throughout the area and not engage in cream skimming or cherry picking of customers. With respect to our interest in particular, this commission has never had a hearing on the petition for waiver or related to any petition for waiver in the past, and there's a public interest standard in reviewing the waiver. And so we felt that if this case actually proceeded to a hearing, that as an association we would want to be involved in matters related to public interest and a finding of public interest as to whether this sort of competitive entry is in the public interest in the Knowledge Community Telephone Company service area. So that was the reason that we intervened. At this point, it appears that Knowledge Community Telephone no longer objects to the granting of this certification. I think, based on my understanding of the facts is that, Mid-Continent already provides cable service in Lenox, which obviously makes it, this case maybe a little different than others as well. But given the fact that Knowledge Community Telephone, company is no longer objecting, we felt that it was necessary for us to withdraw. So. That's why we filed it. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think I'd like to move on the withdrawal first. Any comment on the question of withdrawal from either Mid-Continent or staff?
No comment from Mid-Continent. This is Scott Anderson with Mid-Continent. We appreciate the opportunity, but we don't have any further comment.
And staff, no comment there. Is there a motion on withdrawal? Commissioner Hanson.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that the Commission grant the withdrawal of intervener status as requested by the parties.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none.
Just a quick comment, Chairman.
Certainly.
First of all, I want to thank the interveners for caring for the public interest and the opportunity to at least be involved if you needed to be. But thank you also for withdrawing when you saw there wasn't an opportunity to really change the public interest. Thank you.
Other discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor, Commissioner Hanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That will bring us to the second question to be resolved. Shall the Commission approve the amended certificate of authority? And with that, we'll turn to Mid-Continent.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner and staff and Commission. This is Scott Anderson with Mid-Continent. We have filed an amended application for our amended certificate of authority to provide service in the rural exchange area of Lenox. We've responded to the staff's data requests and other questions, and we're simply seeking approval of that amended certificate of authority, and we're here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Pat Stevenson of staff. Staff has reviewed the amended COA application. Everything is in order. So we would recommend, number one, granting the waiver ARSD 20:10:32:15 to the extent the area is not the entire Knowledge study area. And then also we would recommend granting Mid-Continent an amended certificate of authority. And thank you.
Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion? Commissioner Feagin.
Mr. Chairman, NTC 12-035, move that the commission approve the amended certificate of authority with the stipulations of staff.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Next telecom item, TC 12-040, on the matter of the filing by Local Exchange Carrier Association for approval of revisions to its access services tariff number 1. And the question, shall the commission approve the revisions to the access services tariff number 1, or how shall the commission proceed? And I'm going to turn to Aleka first.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Darla Pullman Rogers, and I represent LECA in this docket. It is LECA's position that the revised tariff page 17-4.5 is ready for approval by this Commission. We believe that we have followed the rules, the applicable rules in Section 51909 of the FCC order. And we believe that the revised tariff page that we filed on August 15 is ready for implementation, and we would like to be in a position to have the commission approve that at this time. Now, in email correspondence and some discussions with staff and the attorney for AT&T, it's my understanding that AT&T may be requesting a hearing on this in this docket today, and I'm also prepared to respond to that, but perhaps you want to hear the formal request before we respond to that. I also have with me today Joe Shotwell, who is the consultant from CHR for LECA. She has, in fact, done the tariff page and the worksheet for it and can respond to any questions you may have with regard to the revisions that we've made to that tariff page.
Thank you. At this point, I think we will turn to Mr. Van Camp and see where his desires are here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Van Camp on behalf of AT&T Communications of the Midwest. We have, of course, been granted intervention status and are a party in this docket. I think there are several factual matters that we will allege through the process that is the normal process before this commission in a contested matter. I don't believe that I'm prepared today to put on any factual evidence, nor is there anyone here to keep a record. So while Ms. Rogers may state for LECA that they believe that this docket is ready for adjudication and finality, I would certainly offer you that it's not. Our position all along is at this point that there was an improper calculation in a reduction of the minutes of use in the determining of the transitional rate. Now, I can go through what our allegations, our concerns are in the calculation of that rate, and then their consultant can come up here and counter what I've said, but then that appears to me that we've engaged in some sort of factual determination before the commission. I think at this point we are requesting a hearing. We have party status, and that'll provide the parties the opportunity to present evidence before the commission, and then the commission can make a determination. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm available for any questions you might have.
Thank you. I think at this point I'm going to go to staff, get their comment, and then we'll come back around, Darla. Staff.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff, and staff would recommend that the commission not approve the tariff at this time, that we do hold a contested case hearing. Leah has given me, and I've provided the date to the both parties an early December hearing date, and we will work backwards then with testimony and discovery. We just need to work out the details of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Darla?
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. LECA opposes AT&T's request for a hearing in this docket and respectfully suggests that a hearing is not necessary for several reasons. First of all, the statute that allows the Commission to schedule a hearing, either upon receiving a petition for intervention or upon its own motion, is, in our view, discretionary. And what it says is, upon a tariff filing, the Commission may conduct a hearing. So we believe that that gives you some discretion. We would suggest that a hearing in this case would not result in any change in the outcome of the revised tariff page that LECA has filed on behalf of Swiftel. The other thing that I would point out in that statute, which is 4931.12.5, is that the standard of conducting the hearing, or the goal of the hearing, is for the Commission to determine whether any new price or change in price or practice is fair and reasonable. And we would submit that this statute was a pre-FCC order statute, and that I think the standards have changed to a certain extent. I think now your view of the revised page, tariff page, is to determine whether or not we have properly followed the guidelines and dictates of the federal order with regard to intrastate terminating transitional access rates. And I would submit to you that, in fact, LECA has followed the steps outlined in Section 51909 of the order in calculating Swiftel's transitional rate. And we believe that this commission can determine that, in this case, with what's already been filed in the record, without conducting a hearing. I'd also like to point out just a little bit of background and what's transpired so far in this case. LECA, and I'm speaking now on behalf of LECA, not Swiftel, but LECA is really not certain what AT&T's objections are to the revised tariff page. And we filed our revised tariff on behalf of all the companies, and this commission approved all of those pages with the exception of Swiftel. On July 3rd, we discussed revisions to those pages with AT&T's attorney, Mr. Van Camp, and we submitted a revised page at that time. Then we received some correspondence back from Mr. Van Camp, and part of it was that he said one thing his client would want to see is some recognition in the tariff that the transitional rate does not apply to terminating CMRS minutes as well as CMRS local switching minutes. And so we then revised our tariff page to make sure that we had clearly addressed those concerns, and also to make sure that the language that we placed in this tariff page was consistent with Swiftel's NECA tariff, because NECA has, or Swiftel has its own filing. It's not part of the NECA tariff. It has its own filing at the FCC. On July 9th is when we submitted that revised tariff page to Bill and asked for some input. And Bill did respond. Mr. Van Camp said that he'd sent it to his client. He would get back to us. On the 13th of July, he said again that they were reviewing the page and sorry about the delay. And then finally on the 18th, Ms. Kramer asked about the status of this tariff because, of course, we were anxious to get it resolved. At that point, Mr. Van Camp responded that his client was putting together some information, and we were at that point going to discuss it with Swiftel or Brookings. And that was the new revisions that we had offered, and hopefully he would get back to us soon. Well, I then met with Ms. Kramer a couple couple of weeks ago, and I shared our revised tariff page with her and what we thought the status was, and then went ahead and filed that page on the 15th of August. And then now we're at the point where AT&T is requesting a hearing. But at no time during those discussions did AT&T propose alternative language, or did they even share with LECA exactly what their objections are to our tariff page. From comments made by Mr. Van Camp, such as the ones that he made today, it appears as if AT&T objects to the beginning revenues that LECA included in its calculations. And I would just remind all of you, as you know, LECA is bound by the FCC rules and the guidelines that are contained in 51909. We based Swiftel's calculation on billed revenues for the applicable time period. Those were revenues that were billed by Swiftel and that they were paid. Those are the revenues that were actually received by Swiftel for that period. They weren't disputed. They were even paid by AT&T. So as of March 31, 2011, these are the revenues that Swiftel has collected, and they have there's no way to change those revenues. They are what they are, and to say we dispute those or we don't think that we think those revenues are too high. If you have a dispute, AT&T has other recourse. There are ways to dispute prior billings or prior payments, but this is what's paid. This is the time period set by the rule, and that's what LECA followed. So that's, I guess, our point. We followed the FCC rules. AT&T has failed to really tell us exactly what the issues are or what will be offered in a hearing that could provide you with any more background, and so we do not think that a hearing is appropriate or necessary. Finally, I would like to point out that Swiftel would really like to be in a position to implement the transitional tariff rate. As of this time, Swiftel's tariff rate is 12.5 cents because that's what's been approved by the commission. I received some correspondence from Swiftel's billing person this morning. They went ahead and billed the 12.5 cents post July 1 of 2012 because this new tariff rate has not, or the transitional tariff has not been approved. They have received two disputes so far, and I think we're really concerned that that is going to just continue. In fact, the email I received said that the whole effort will create quite a true-up and reconciling effort if we cannot get this tariff page approved and the transitional rate implemented. So we would also respectfully request today that you go ahead and approve the tariff page. If you're going to go ahead and order a hearing, we would ask that you would approve it subject to retroactive adjustment, because I think it's putting Swiftel in at a disadvantage for not being able to charge the transitional rate. I would also note that in its petition for intervention, AT&T did not request suspension of the revised tariff. And so, again, our position is that we don't need a hearing in this case. We follow the rules that are there. There are other recourses that AT&T can follow if they have objections to Swiftel's billings, and we would ask that you implement or approve the tariff. If you're going to go ahead and order a hearing, we would ask that you still implement or approve the tariff subject to retroactive true-up. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Van Camp, we would love to hear if Darla has accurately identified your concerns or if there are other items. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Rogers is correct. In our initial filing, we did ask that the rate be approved subject to a true-up. So you know, I need to think about the impact of approving that, as long as the order is appropriately drafted, which I'm sure it would be by Ms. Wiest, that the rate itself is allowed to go into effect. I understand Darla's concern in that if ultimately we're going to end at a minimum at the rate that they are asking for in the transitional filing. Functionally, though, I think the thing that I took from Ms. Rogers' presentation more than anything is she seeks to turn the entire contested case hearing process on its ear. I am here today asserting that they haven't followed the FCC order in the calculation of the transitional rate. I have party status on behalf of my client. The only way for this commission, I believe, to make a determination of whether or not they have correctly followed the FCC rule and the determination of what that rate is to have a contested hearing. Now, let's look at the LECA filing itself, the docket. Why is, as an initial answer or as initial concern, why is the Brookings transitional rate nearly two times the transitional rate of any other member of LECA? It's, in fact, if you look at the number of members that filed their transitional pages, it's, in fact, 3 to 4 times the average rate of the members. That begs the question of how did we arrive at that rate? And I think that that's what, when we look at the adjustment of the minutes that were used in the calculation under the FCC order, I think that's what a hearing is designed for and is allowed or put in place so that a company like AT&T can present evidence to this commission of how the FCC rules weren't properly filed. Now, this isn't a standard motion to dismiss by Darla. It isn't a summary judgment, so I don't know what the standard is here, but certainly if I have a base accusation and I have party status and request a hearing, if the commission goes solely on the filing of LECAs, what's the point of anyone intervening anymore if the commission has the discretion and ability to discard our party status? We need to have some adjudicative process or hearing so that we can present evidence. I don't think now is the time. Certainly, I don't believe that I'm prepared. I don't know if Darla is prepared to present testimony or evidence at this point on how they calculated that rate. Frankly, I don't think I'm qualified to do it, and I'd have to get somebody on the phone pretty quick. Second, I think it's important that we remember there are two things that are involved in this tariff page. Darla's right when she read my emails that the information we requested that they put on the FCC, on their tariff page relating to switching charges is something we wanted to be clarified for mobile traffic. Fine. We still believe that the transitional rate calculation was done inappropriately. So while at the end of the day we might agree that the footnote that LECA added is something that we can live with and appreciate them taking the effort to do, we still think the calculation was done incorrectly, and we need to have the ability to prove that to this commission, or at least to put our facts on versus their facts so the commission can make a determination as to what is the appropriate transitional rate under the same FCC rule guidelines that Darla identified. Lastly, I understand Darla's position in representing LECA, and I'm here on behalf of AT&T Communications of the Midwest. I can tell this commission that AT&T and the city of Brookings and their Swift-Tel officials have had numerous discussions. They are well aware, Brookings is, of what the issue is in the calculation of this tariff and the transitional rate. We've been trying to settle this. There have been offers and counteroffers, and that's fine, and none of that's admissible. But to say that Brookings isn't aware of what's going on, maybe there's a I don't know what's going on inside of LECA. That's Darla's problem and Brookings' problem. But the companies have been talking between themselves as late as last week that I'm aware of. So at this point, I don't see how the commission proceeds without moving to a hearing so that we can put on some evidence before the commission on that calculation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mary Sisak representing Brookings Municipal Utilities.
Yeah, if you'd hold just a moment, we're very close to getting to you. Just a moment.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mary.
Yes, sir. Brookings would just like to support all of the statements made by Ms. Rogers, and if possible, maybe refocus or focus on a couple of important things that have been said by AT&T's counsel and by Ms. Rogers on behalf of LECA. It is our understanding that at heart, the dispute has to do with the number, the base of the number of minutes used to compute the new LECA tariff rate. And I would simply point out to the Commission that a very similar issue arose in Swiftel's filing of its federal tariff at the FCC that AT&T also disputed a couple of years ago on the basis of a recalculated federal rate that seemed to show an extremely high rate, and as alleged by AT&T, based on an inaccurate number of minutes used. And the result of that was that Swiftel pointed out to the FCC that the reason why the minutes was appeared different was because they had removed wireless minutes, which AT&T had disputed and refused to pay. And as a result of Swiftel's filing that response to AT&T's dispute, AT&T did not pursue the dispute. The FCC did not challenge Swiftel's federal tariff. The tariff went into effect, and that has happened with no problem. It is my understanding that essentially the same problem is now at the root of AT&T's dispute with Swiftel's LECA tariff rate. And it seems to me that if possibly we had maybe some paper filings so that AT&T could outline its issue, Swiftel could respond to it, possibly there would be no need for a hearing, and it could be resolved simply through some few paper filings.
Thank you. Questions from the Commission for any of the parties? If not, is there a motion?
I have a question of staff.
Certainly.
LECA talked about retroactive true-up. Sometimes when we do true-ups and try to do it retroactive, it's even more confusing. Do you have an opinion on their suggestion to do that?
Well, I personally, of course, don't do the true-up. But so in my case, yes, it's very easy, I believe, to be done. But I do know that we have done true-ups in a number of cases, and I believe we have the ability to do that. We've got billings. I believe that would not be a problem. We would have to pick a date certain and be able to do that then.
Other questions? Commissioner Hansen.
I'm just curious. Is it 601 and half a dozen of the other? Would they continue to collect funds? Whether there's a true-up or not, there's going to be a potential transfer of funds, isn't there going to be? I mean, does it really matter whether we – they both make good arguments, but the mechanics of it, I'm curious about.
My understanding with respect to what Ms. Rogers' request is that the Commission would today allow the tariff to go into effect, and were you requesting the July 1st date? Is that correct, Ms. Rogers?
Yes.
But we would allow it to go into effect subject to it being subject to, I think her words were, a retroactive adjustment. AT&T did not object to that, so my opinion is I don't think there would be a problem with going forward in that respect, although I would agree with Mr. Van Camp that I believe that the Commission needs to go forward with a hearing on this, since there appear to be a number of factual issues in dispute.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did you have a question? Other questions? Is there a motion? Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, I will move that the Commission proceed to a hearing on this matter, and in the until a ruling is made by the Commission that we approve the tariff subject to a potential true-up.
Discussion on the motion. I would simply say that seems to make sense to me, that that we implement the tariff subject to whatever may be the outcome of the hearing and a retroactive true-up at that point, if there needs to be any. At this point, we don't know. That way, we have the opportunity to get all the facts on the table and make sure we're doing it right going forward. Other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. TC 12-079, in the matter of the request of Citizens Telephone Company of Minnesota LLC for certification regarding its use of federal universal service support, and they have a request for a waiver and to certify. Mr. Hegdahl.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Yes, Citizens has respectfully request waiver of the Commission's ETC filing requirements pursuant to ARSD 2010-3256 on the ground that the reporting requirements in support of the ETC certification are unduly burdensome and unnecessary. We serve 64 access lines in South Dakota out of our Jasper, Minnesota exchange. We've completed an extensive ETC certification filing with Minnesota Commission, and we expect to receive recertification from that commission. And we attached a copy of our public filing in our filing with your commission. Basically, the reason for our waiver is that waiver request is that we believe it's burdensome to extrapolate specific costs and projects specific to South Dakota customers from our Minnesota operations, and we also respectfully request that the commission certify us as an ETC in its annual ETC certification to the FCC. Are there any questions?
Let me go to staff first of all.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, this filing is consistent with filings that have taken place in previous years where the Commission did grant the requested waiver and provide certification, and we would recommend that take place again.
Thank you. Questions from the Commission? Commissioner Fegan.
Mr. Jacobson, is it stating in the waiver that would be a permanent waiver?
No, that's a good point. This waiver should be approved for this year only.
Okay.
And that's the way we've historically done it, yes.
So we would amend their request to, it's a yearly instead of a permanent?
We would just make sure that in the order that okay. The waiver was granted for 1 year.
Great, thank you.
Additional questions? I have a question for Mr. Hegdahl. Can you tell me the 64 lines that are served, what kind of broadband internet service you're providing to those 64?
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid I can't answer that question. I'm not sure. I believe we provide some level of broadband service to those customers, but I'm not sure about the degree of that.
Let me just... give me a moment, and Dave, do you know the answer to that question?
No, I don't. We did ask a question in the docket, and the answer is also in the docket. It's not quite clear, though, what facilities actually enter South Dakota. The response provided was, we recently upgraded our transfer facilities to Jasper, switching from a 3T1 IMA to a DS3, and upgrading the main high-speed internet shelf in the Jasper Central Office. It says these upgrades will benefit voice service and permit more consistent, higher available broadband speeds. It's not possible to identify the O&M expense that supports and improves service specific to the South Dakota portion of the Jasper Exchange.
Okay, and I'd picked out all of that. I was just wondering if I was missing something in the filing, and I'm not. So the filing doesn't tell us. Mr. Hegdahl, you can't tell us. That's really a pretty important question for me. I need to know what kind of service you're offering to South Dakota customers in that regard. Do you have anybody that you can get on the line in the next hour to answer that question?
I will do my best, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, before we move on, any other questions from the commission? Okay, I'm gonna defer this one till further down the docket. Mr. Hegdahl, if you can find somebody that can answer that question, we will come back around to you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. With that, we will move on to the matter of request for certification regarding the use of Federal Universal Service support in dockets TC 12044, 45, 46, 50, 57, 61, 67, 71, 74, and 80. And we will go first in the matter of the request of Knowledge Community Telephone for certification. And let's see, Arlene Morgan, are you handling this?
Yes, with Mr. Schoenauer. In docket TC 12044, Knowledge Community Telephone is requesting from the Commission an issuance of certification to the FCC and USAC, stating that we should receive our universal service support determined for distribution in the coming year.
Thank you. Staff.
This is Kara Semler for staff. Staff recommends the commission provide the requested certification. The company has submitted into the docket all of the necessary information.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Okay, seeing none, we will move to the next item, and we will take all of these as one at the conclusion. Moving to TC 12-045 in the matter of the request of Knowledge of the Black Hills LLC for certification. Ms. Morgan.
As stated in the previous request for Knowledge Community Telephone, we're requesting the same from the commission approval for Knowledge of the Black Hills LLC.
Staff.
Staff's recommendation is the same. The company has submitted all necessary information to the docket. We recommend certification.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? I do have some questions on this one. Ms. Morgan, if you could help me out. You've, in your confidential response, and I won't list the, and it's to the first question, you've indicated a particular dollar amount that you intend to invest in line extensions into areas never served by Knowledge. It appears that none of those are in the Rapid City area, and we've got some potential customers in that area that need some service, and so I'm wondering if you can tell me why none of this is being directed to the Rapid City area.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bruce Schoonover with Knowledge. First off, is we don't have ETC status in the Rapid City area exchange. And in terms of where particularly those extensions are being, and actually that is what was in the details of the filing. So I guess that's the answer to the question.
Okay, and that's, I think, maybe what I was missing is the fact that you don't have ETC status, nor are you requesting it in Rapid City, correct?
Yes, sir. Correct.
Okay. Other questions? Seeing none, we will move to Interstate Telecommunications Cooperative. Mr. Heiberger.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, stand ready for any questions.
Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, the company did respond to the staff interrogatories, and we'd recommend granting certification.
Questions? Seeing none, we will move to Valley Telephone. Mary Jo.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We are requesting the commission to issue a certification to the FCC and USAC indicating the compliance with the 47 U.S.C. Section 254E, and that we should receive all federal universal service support determined for distribution to the company in 2013.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. The company did respond to staff questions, and we'd recommend certification.
Thank you. Valley Telecommunications Cooperative. Darren, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Standing ready for any questions.
Very good. Staff.
Yes, Chairman. The company did respond to staff data requests, and we would recommend granting certification.
Questions? Seeing none, the request from Golden West Telecommunications Cooperative. Mr. Law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Denny Law and Jill Reinert from Golden West Telecommunications ready to answer any questions.
Staff, Mr. Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Rounds for staff. I would just request approval of certification and also comment that in all the ETCs I've looked over, this is probably one of the most complete and best written.
Very good. I appreciate that additional comment. Questions? Okay, if not, next is Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Telephone Authority.
Mr. Chairman, good morning.
Hi.
Darla Rogers. I represent CRST Telephone Authority. I'm not sure if Mona Thompson, who's the interim acting manager, was able to be on the phone today. You might ask if she's present, but if not, I'm here, and hopefully we can cover any questions you may have.
I've got her on the list. Mona, are you on the line? You're it.
We are requesting that certification be granted to CRST Telephone Authority, and I will certainly try to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, the company did respond to staff questions, and we would recommend granting certification.
Questions? Thank you. West River Telecommunications Cooperative. Bonnie Krause.
Yes, Bonnie Krause and Blaine Lemaire representing West River Telecommunications Mobridge. We are available for any questions. We are requesting certification be granted for the West River Telecommunications Mobridge study area.
Dave.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, the company did respond to all the staff data requests, and we would recommend granting certification.
Questions? Moving to RC Communications, Inc. Robin Thorson, are you on the line?
Yes, sir, I am here.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, I have nothing to add at this time, sir.
Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. Again, the company did respond to staff, and we'd recommend granting certification.
Questions? Seeing none, we will move to Northern Valley Communications. Mr. Kramer, Mr. Groft.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Kramer. I'm an attorney in Aberdeen with Vance Gosch and Kramer, and I represent Northern Valley Communications. Its annual certification is in compliance with the statutory and regulatory requirements to be certified as an ETC. Northern Valley has also responded to staff's data requests, and therefore we would ask the commission to issue an appropriate certification to the FCC and the USAC. And James Groft, NVC CEO, is also on the line, and we're available for any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Rounds for staff. I would just recommend that the commission grant certification as requested.
Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a mega motion? Commissioner Fegan.
Mr. Chairman, in the matter of the request for certifications regarding the use of federal universal service supports to dockets TC-12-044, 045, 046, 050, 057, 061, 067, 071, 074, and 080. Move that the commission approve.
Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. TC 12-100, in the matter of the filing for approval of amendment to the interconnection agreement between Quest Corp, DBA CenturyLink, and McLeod USA Telecommunications Services, DBA Paytech Business Services, DBA Windstream Communications for the state of South Dakota. Mr. Topp, do you have anything to add, or should I go to staff?
Nothing to add from my perspective. I'm available to answer questions, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Ms. Semler.
Thank you. The agreement was properly filed and executed. It does not appear to contain discriminatory language. There were no comments filed. Staff recommends approval.
Questions? Seeing none, is there a motion? I would move in TC 12-100 that the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. We will move down to TC 12-104 in the matter of the filing by WiMAX Communications Corp for approval of revisions to its tariff number 2. And the question being, shall the commission grant an additional 60-day extension to the tariff suspension? Staff.
This is Kara Semler for staff. You know, there was a filing made just today to withdraw this docket. I think, however, it would be prudent to proceed and to grant. We'd ask you to grant this extension. And next meeting, we can deal with the withdrawal and see what happens.
Yep, agree with that. Questions? Is there a motion? I will move in TC 12-104 that the commission grant the additional 60-day extension to the tariff suspension. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. TC 12-123, in the matter of the filing by Quest Corp DBA CenturyLink for approval of waiver of the utilization threshold requirements in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Mr. Topp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a request. The state of South Dakota has requested having available some ISDN features available to it. In order to provide that service to the state, we need to open up some telephone numbers on a newer tandem switch that's located in Sioux Falls that's no longer or that currently doesn't serve end user customers. But in order to do that, we need to have meet the needs of the state. We need to have those numbers opened up. Sort of the standard thresholds for having blocks of numbers assigned is not met in this case. But in order to get these features to the state, we need to have them opened at this particular switch. The states are delegated by the FCC with the authority to grant assignment of these blocks. What we would do is have a 10,000 block assigned. We would take 1,000 of those for use of the state and then turn the additional 9,000 numbers back to the numbering administrator that would be available for anyone who would need it. So we would ask that the state approve our application.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Chris Dugard for staff. Staff has reviewed the request for waiver as well as prior dockets that are similar to this one. Staff does not have any issues with granting the waiver at this time. Additionally, I handle a lot of the numbering requests from other companies, and our South Dakota's 605 area code isn't projected to exhaust numbers until at least 2021 at this time, which is much further out into the future than most area codes in most states. And so, and I don't think there's a lot of activity. Now, numbers are being, you know, used all the time, but I don't think we're in any imminent risk at this time of having a shortage of numbers. So staff recommends that the commission approve the request for waiver for CenturyLink, direct Newstar to open a new NXX and provide a block of 1,000 numbers in the Sioux Falls Rate Center in the 605 NPA for the outline switch. And then also with the condition that Quest do as, or CenturyLink do as it has offered to do, and donate the remaining 9 blocks back to the industry pool for future assignment to their carriers.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion? Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the commission approve the request for a waiver of the utilization of threshold requirements.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. I will simply say appreciate CenturyLink's willingness to donate back whatever those unused numbers are, unused blocks, to try to keep the system functional, and the balance of the request makes sense to me. Other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Hegdahl, are you back on the line with us? Mr. Hegdahl must still be searching for an answer, and that's just fine. And so we will revert back to TC-12-102 in the matter of the filing by Mid-State Telecom Service for approval of revisions to its tariff number 2. And we will go to Mid-State. Mr. Benton, are you on the line? Okay, we don't have Mr. Benton, but Dan Caldwell is on the line for this docket, and Darla is approaching. Darla, are you going to kick this off? Please.
Before I do that, could I please go back just for a moment to docket TC-12-040, which is the LECA docket? And I just wanted to make sure that I understood your order, and that is that the rate in the tariff, or the effective date of that rate, I think we had requested that it be effective, the transitional rate be effective as of July 1. Just wanted to clarify that that was.
That was certainly my understanding of the motion, and I think everybody's.
That was the intent of my motion, yes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to divert your attention.
Okay. Chairman Nelson?
Yes.
This is Mark Benton. Could you not hear me?
I could not hear you, but we can now.
Okay.
But Darla is here and prepared to proceed.
Again, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Darla Pullman Rogers, and I represent Mid-State Telecom in this docket. As you are aware, Mr. Benton, who is the CEO of Mid-State Telecom, is on the phone, and I also have Marlene Bennett with me today and Dan Caldwell with Consortia Consulting to assist us in working through the issues in this docket. I would also point out that we did file a written response to staff's memorandum, and we were not able to file that till last evening. I'm aware that that's late. We just had too many meetings and couldn't get it filed earlier. But I would also refer to and rely on the comments in that response, in addition to my comments today and what's discussed today, in support of our position. This is a docket that has become the victim of changes in rules and procedures at both the state and the federal level. And unfortunately, as a result, Mid-State Telecom may be penalized, which we require not happen today. The first process that changed was the CLEC access rates, and this commission passed new rules in May of 2011 at the end of the day that said, first of all, that CLECs would charge the RBOC rate. The commission also offered an escape, so to speak, or an exception to that in those rules. And the exception was that a company could file a cost study. MidStake took advantage of that procedure or that escape mechanism or that alternative exception, and they did file a cost study. One problem is that the new rules of the commission did not clearly articulate the process that needed to be followed when using either the RBOC rate or filing a cost study. For example, nothing that compelled or required us to file revised tariff pages. So we kind of bungled along procedurally in an undefined process that for several months now, and it has certainly cost all the parties time, effort, and it's also cost MidState monetarily a lot of dollars. Then in November, the FCC handed down its wonderful order, and that added, I think, more confusion to the process. Well, at the end of the day, we're here, and we need to decide what's the best resolution. We have a fundamental disagreement with staff in our interpretation of the interaction between the state rules and FCC 11-161 order. I believe that staff believes the commission can retroactively adjust a filed rate. MidState believes that under the order of the FCC, the filed rate as of December 29, 2011, is the starting point for calculation of the transitional rate, and that's what we have done. Staff believes that withdrawal of the cost study was significant on the terminating side of the coin, and we disagree based on the FCC's order. You have the task of resolving these differences of interpretations. MidState's actions will be dictated by what you decide. What we are requesting is that you approve the transitional rate filed in TC 12-102, because we believe that we have followed the dictates of the federal order. We will file a separate docket with regard to our originating rate. We believe that the docket before you today deals just with the terminating transitional rate. If you do believe that staff's position is correct, we will certainly be glad to refile our cost study or make any other filings, and we can proceed from there. Above all, we request that you not act in such a way that by sorting through and resolving the procedural confusion, you punish MidState Telecom. This is a unique CLEC. It's unique because it is providing vital services in a community that came and requested them to come into their area. It's also providing services not just in the rural or to urban customers, but in the entire service area. MidState wants to be able to continue to provide those types of services to its customers in its service territory. So we would respectfully request that you grant MidState Telecom's application for and approve the transitional rate as filed. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff, and we would rely on the memo that we had filed also, but I would just like to point out a few things that I did not see in MidState's filing that they made last night. One of those is that at the December 6, 2011 meeting, and at that point we were discussing consultant contracts and should they be approved. At that time, Ms. Rogers stated three or four times that MidState was charging the RBOC benchmark rate and did so as of the effective date of the rules, which were at the end of May in 2011. She thought they had also filed a tariff to reflect that, but was not sure about that. So staff's position is that fact that even they thought they should be charging the RBOC rate and told us that they were as late as December, coupled with the fact that they withdrew the filing on their own volition, would certainly indicate that the starting point for this transitional filing should be the RBOC benchmark rate. And just as a point of clarification, in that filing last night, she points out that MidState's rate would be much higher. I would just like to note that, as we've all know, just because a utility company files a rate case, that's rarely where the number comes down. and we had a number of adjustments. There would have been probably about 10 adjustments that staff was going to further explore on this cost study. But at Ms. Rogers' request, before we moved forward with those data requests, we explained, you know, that what we were going to do, there would be a cost, and on their own, they decided to withdraw, again, this cost study and not proceed forward. And my point in that is just to point out that, you know, they allege in their filing that Mid-State's rate was quite a bit higher. Just based on what we had looked at so far, and it was very incomplete, we hadn't done a whole lot, it was going to be less than 11 cents, and we still had a number of adjustments to make. Staff would ask the commission to order Mid-State to file by a date certain their originating switched access tariff in compliance with our rules, and then maybe in an effort to figure out what they were charging and when, maybe Mid-State could file some sort of clarification as to what rate they were charging and when they were charging it and when they stopped charging it. I know that's what their tariff said, but clearly that's not what they were assessing the IXCs, and the IXCs never came to staff and complained otherwise. So, again, I assumed they were charging the RBOC rate. Thank you.
Questions from the commission? I think the very first question we need to have answered is what was the rate being charged from the conclusion of our rulemaking process through at least the end of the year?
I can answer that, Chairman. This is Marlene Bennett. My understanding from talking with Mid-State staff is that they did begin charging the RBOC rate on their July 2011 bill, which would have been for some usage at the end of May, and they stopped billing that on their January 2012 bill, which would have been usage through the 20th of November 2011. They went back to billing what was in their tariff at that point in time.
And so your testimony is that on December 29th, you were charging the tariff rate?
Correct.
Even though prior to that it had been the rate required by the rule, correct?
It would have been the RBOC rate for, yes, a period of about 5 months in there, and then they went back to what was in their tariff.
Additional questions? Commissioner Feagin.
Could you clarify that one more time? When did you change it to the tariff rate? What date?
It would have been for their usage as of November 20th.
November or December? I thought you said December earlier. November?
November.
So by November 20th of 2011, you were charging 11.5 cents?
Correct.
To everyone?
Correct. Well, except for they do have a separate contract with AT&T, and so they continue to bill under the contract for that particular carrier, but all other carriers were at 11.5 for intrastate.
And just so that I'm clear, these were for both originating and terminating. They were equal.
Correct. They were equal.
Other questions?
A question for Ms. Rogers. You said this doesn't affect originating, but your filed tariff pages does have the originating rates in there.
Yes, but we understand staff's point on that, and so we will make a clarifying filing with regard to the originating. You know, we're still under discussion as to what that filing will be, and it depends a little bit on what happens today.
I guess maybe part of my concern is that you're relying on the filed rate doctrine, but you actually weren't charging rates under the filed rate doctrine for how many months?
4 or 5 months.
And it's your Mid-States position that the commission has no jurisdiction over terminating switched access rights?
I believe, or the way I read the order, is that the FCC order capped originating and terminating access rates as of the 30 days after the date of the order, or the effective date was December 29, 2011, then what the order says is that for originating intrastate access rates, the rules that are in place by the commission or that are amended thereafter remain in effect. And then for terminating, the rules outline a process for going into the transition to a bill and keep. And in those rules, under the first segment of the rules, what it says is you take your filed rate as of December 29, 2011, and then you calculate backwards and figure out revenues, et cetera. And that's what we've done. I might point out here, by way of clarification, that Mid-State was not at all and is not trying to manipulate rules or systems. We filed a cost study. We felt that our cost study, and in fact what was filed, certainly would have justified a higher rate. It was not our intention necessarily that we wanted to go up to this rate. We knew that this is the bottom rate set by the commission under the rule. We felt that in between, which is where we were, was a good place to land, and we were kind of hoping that that's maybe where we would be able to land throughout the process. We just didn't quite get there.
And it's also your position that you would be refiling a cost study to the extent the commission would accept staff's position?
Yes, we would be willing to do that, certainly.
Not willing to do that. That would be your position, that if the commission went with staff's position, then Mid-State would be, I'm trying to figure this out, you would be refiling your cost study to demonstrate what?
To demonstrate why we are not at the RBOC rate. I don't think that the filing of the cost study or withdrawal of that cost study really has anything to do with this docket. And I think at the time that we left the cost study in place, our position was we want to have this on file to preserve any flexibility or options that we may have on the originating side, because, you know, we really felt that the ceiling or floor or whatever the rate that we had in place, the filed rate that we had in place on the terminating side, is where we would go from there.
So the cost study, to the extent it was refiled, would only have to do with originating rates?
Again, it depends on what action this commission takes. That's our position, is that the cost study does not affect terminating rates, that is dictated by the FCC order. I don't think that that's necessarily staff's position. So I guess depending on what this commission does, that will depend on what we file. If we are just then dealing with our originating rates, there would obviously have to be some adjustments made to the study that we filed. If you believe that withdrawal of that cost study docket also affects the terminating side, we'll refile it as is.
What prompted Mid-State to change the rate on November 20th?
I think the main thing that prompted it was we were in probably at that December 12th or 6th hearing, and even either before or after that, we had comments and from staff and even during the hearing that you have to file, I mean, you have to charge your tariff rate. And so then we researched that a little bit more, basically agreed. And we, again, we did not change our tariff at that point because we had the cost study pending that had it here. We had the rule here, and we were in the middle and hoping one way or another we would get some relief from that cost study.
Other questions? Mr. Islov.
I'd just like to ask staff if that was their recollection for the reason for that change in November.
I guess I don't, you know, I have no idea. I know the order was released the 18th, you know, the FCC order to go in effect December 29, and everybody knew you had to use your tariff that was in place then. And my recollection to Mid-State was you have to charge what's on your tariff. I thought very clearly making the point, you need to change it to the RBOC rate, not go back to the 11.5 cents, but apparently I wasn't clear when I made that point to Mid-State.
Other questions? Action from the commission. I guess it would be my thought that we defer this for a couple of weeks. This is, to me, a fascinating question that we're wrestling with, and I dearly want to make sure we get this exactly right, and as opposed to making some quick determination today based on some new things that I've learned, I'd like to give this a couple of weeks. Other thoughts from the commissioners?
Well, you're right. There was a brief just filed this morning. I haven't even had a chance to read that brief, and of course, certainly we've had some discussion on it here, but I think that's very appropriate.
Any other thoughts? If not, we will defer this for 2 weeks. Appreciate your input today.
Thank you.
Mr. Higdahl, are you back with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Can you tell us what kind of broadband internet you are offering to the 64 South Dakota customers?
Right now we are offering 1.5 megabit service, and it's available to 61 of the 64 customers.
And the other three are just simply too far from your cabinet? Is that the problem?
That's my understanding, yes.
Other questions from the commission? If not, is there, and Mr. Higdahl, thank you. I appreciate that greatly. Part of the reason for my question is we've got some issues with some of the telephone companies that are not domiciled in South Dakota but serve South Dakota customers, not providing what we consider to be good broadband service. And it appears in this case, you're partway there, and we appreciate that effort and hope that the service can improve as years go by.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hansen?
I'm just curious. I'm inclined to grant, I don't think it would pass, but I'm inclined to grant a permanent waiver. I'm just out of curiosity. What type of hammer would we have if we did that? Would we still have a hammer, so to speak?
I think that was our concern, is the question is we'd like to review this every year, and by making the filing every year, then the commission also will not forget to put it on the FCC certification list. I mean, if you have a permanent waiver and you know, the next year it's not a docketed item, that's what we go by, to put it on the FCC letter.
Need to set the alarm every year.
Yes.
Okay. I recognize that it's a very, very small piece for their company, but of course it's a very, very big deal to each one of those 64 people. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other comments or motions? Commissioner Fegan.
Mr. Chairman, it is just nice that we don't sometimes over-regulate businesses that don't have a lot of business in South Dakota, and I appreciate the waiver that the commission allows in this case. So in that text, I would move that TC 12-079, that we grant the waiver on an annual basis and certify Citizens Telecommunication Company of Minnesota.
Discussion on the motion. I would agree. I mean, I am concerned about the regulatory costs for the company, but I also believe we have a duty to those 64 South Dakotans to keep an eye on what's happening in that particular area. And so I think the annual review, annual opportunity to ask questions is appropriate, and certainly support the motion. Other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Hegdahl, again, thank you for getting that additional information for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners.
Announcements. PUC commissioners and staff will be meeting with consumers at the South Dakota State Fair August 30th through September 3rd at the State Fairgrounds in Huron. PUC commissioners will be attending the East River Electric annual meeting in Sioux Falls at the Ramcota on September 5th, and the next regularly scheduled meeting will be Tuesday, September 11th, right here. Anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Move to adjourn.
Those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries.